next generation. Right, the recording's good to go, so the next session we'll begin is on a next generation registry directory service, presented to us by Michele, ably joined by his colleagues on the expert working group. Over to you, Michele.
Thanks, Jonathan. Okay, the expert working group, next generation directory service, RDS, replacement for Who Is, reboot of Who Is, call it what you will. We have a number of slides, and we have most of our members here in the room. Rather than boring you all to tears by kind of going through a bunch of slides robotically, I'm going to work on the basis that most of you have some understanding of what the hell we're talking about, and I'll go through a couple of slides, but I'd hope that you'd actually interrupt us with questions, queries, and constructive feedback. Members in the room, well, there's myself. Hi. You all know who I am, I hope, at this stage. Rod Rasmussen is here as well. Lanray is over there. Faisal's hiding in between various different people. And I see Stephanie down there, and I'm not sure where the others are. I think there's a couple of them knocking around the place somewhere. Next slide, please, Lars. Okay, this was formed based on an ICANN board directive, implementing the Who Is review team recommendations, and is redefining the purpose and provision of GTLD registration data. EWG was formed to assess the need for next generation registration directory services and recommend a revolutionary approach. When we started discussing this, we took the view that rather than trying to put a great big band-aid on a massive open wound, that we would restart things from scratch. Start with a clean slate and build it up from there. Next slide, please. Our initial report was published back on the 24th of June, and I hope that you've all downloaded it and read it and reread it and studied it. We held a webinar, Yes, that was last week. Sorry, I'm confused about days of the week. We're recommending a paradigm shift, abandoning the current concept of a one-size-fits-all Whois system and replacing that with a purpose-driven system to improve privacy, accuracy, and accountability. Next slide, please. Okay. Based on use cases, we form consensus on all these principles, and the key thing to bear in mind here is that while there is a great diversity of the members of the EWG, we've all worked on the basis of working towards a solution together and not squabbling amongst ourselves. So this has been very kind of, collaborative. Collaborative? Okay. Rod agrees with me. Yippee.
Yeah, despite you.
Thank you. Yeah, so despite my best efforts, we've actually been quite collaborative about these things. We've gone through the various domestic applicability, international considerations, the various data elements, access methods, validation and accuracy, standard validation service, contractual relationships, storage, escrow, permissible purposes and impermissible purposes. Oh, and just to tell you, as Michael is down the back as well, he's there. Hello, Michael. And data disclosure. And then we have this new concept, which is on the next slide. And I'm going through these quickly, as I said already, on the basis most of you know what we're talking about. This concept that we're calling ARDS, though somebody else has already suggested that we find a way to rename it to TARDIS. This is the model we're looking at now under our proposal. Where you've got the various different actors, and we introduce the concept of a requestor, and then depending on the type of request and who the requestor is and the purpose for the request, they get access to different bits of data with or without authentication, and the idea of, you know, this gated access. It's a consensus.
But not all gated.
But not all gated. Thank you, Rod. Consensus view, again, reiterating, we all agree on things for once, which is nice and refreshing. It reflects compromises that will not satisfy all stakeholders. In other words, we all have to, you know, give and take a little. What we admit, it's probably not perfect.
We need the next slide. Next slide, and then.
Yeah, and you know the thing is, you know, if you've got feedback on it, please do let us know. We're holding a public session on Monday, and we also will be meeting with several stakeholder groups over the course of the week. And we have a number of questions for discussion, actually just in terms of next steps. At the moment, we're looking at presenting a final report by Buenos Aires. So the next slide, please. The last one is the discussion questions.
One more.
Yeah, the last one. There you go. Discussion questions. And these are the ones where we're just kind of eliciting input from the community, you know, just to help us. You know, are we on the right track? Are we off the track? So are there additional RDS model advantages and disadvantages? How would this happen? How would that happen? Et cetera, et cetera. So there's a bunch of those questions. As I said, I went through this very, very quickly on the basis that I wanted you to engage with us. Yoav.
Yeah, just a question. I know this is... I know this is being considered in another working group, the issue of internationalized data, using different languages in the database, transliteration, translation, or whatever. Are you doing anything about that? Are you talking about that? Is this going to be considered, or you're leaving it to the other working group?
So, yes, we are considering this, but not the actual policy of how that works. What we're trying to do is build a system that it makes it possible to implement policy around that, and that would be part of the consideration, but okay, not dictate how that would actually work.
When you say that, in what sense? In what sense this is a system that allows that?
This system will support whatever the policy dictates in terms of IDNs, IDN variants, all that kind of thing. It should be script agnostic. It should be, you know, full UTF-8.
I mean, I'm not talking about IDNs. I'm talking about the data being in different languages, not the domain names.
Yeah, meaning any data in the system.
Okay.
It's not dependent on a particular script.
Well, there are policy issues about that. That's what I'm.
Yeah, but
trying
we're
to...
okay. So, like, let's say, for argument's sake, if you have an address written in Arabic, our system would support that. That's not an issue.
Okay.
I mean, it's not. It doesn't. The system doesn't really care about the script of the data elements.
Okay. Can I add that our activities are not focused on operations yet. We are more focused on the principle. And I think the principle supports the inclusion of IDN. The operational aspect of it is another thing entirely. And that can be handled.
Yeah, if I can clarify, it's Margie. We do have a principle in there that says that the translation and transliteration issues should be dealt with through another forum. So I know there's the PDP, for example, underway with respect to that, and I think that's one of our principles.
Jeff?
Thanks. I just want to make sure I understand something, because we had we talked about this at the registry stakeholder group, and I think it was Scott, right, Chuck, that came in and talked to us. Scott Hollenbeck came in and talked to us about and the way he explained it, the way I understood it, is that it could be, for lack of a better term, a centralized, decentralized model.
Wow.
In the sense that you could centralize the access to the data, but all of the data could still be stored with the registries, for example. The question on there that talks about registration, data storage, duration, escrow, and access log requirements to me seems more only applicable if it's some new centralized provider that's going to do everything where all the registries have to feed our data to that provider. I'm not sure it's necessarily a question if it's that centralized, decentralized model, if you will. So I just want to make it clear that even though you're asking that question, that it doesn't kind of bias the results to automatically assume that there's going to be some new provider that ICANN hires or outsources that is now going to be the one source of all the data. I want to make sure that's clear, because that's the last thing that I personally or even my company would want is to now create a new player that's going to house all of the data, and now I have to worry about that new player that I can't hire, and we got to just then spend millions of dollars more for this. I'm okay with a centralized body in the middle that, for lack of a better term, accredits people that can do certain searches and get certain data. I'm fine with that, but I don't want, and a lot of the registries were doing this discussion, we don't want all of our data now stored with another provider, that we'd rather work on that centralized, decentralized model.
Yeah, I think the authoritative source of data is still going to be the registry. So the copies are going to be with the ARDS provider.
It's a different question. It's not necessarily, it's not just who's the authoritativeness of that data, but it's also where is that data stored. And from our perspective as a registry, and we're going to have a number of it's our preference not to have to send, I don't know how we would do it, but on a real-time basis have to send that data now to a third party that's just going to then take those files, put it into its own database, and then serve it up to other people. Does that make any sense? It's kind of like, I guess the old IRIS model was sort of based on what I'm talking about here, which is I don't want to create a new player now that each of the registries and registrars have to send all of our data to, and then they're going to do everything that we're doing now. I hope that makes any sense. I'm getting puzzled looks, so I'll stop.
No, we've certainly had this discussion within the working group. I would say the model what we're proposing is not what you're talking about. It is actually copying the data to a centralized system. And they got aggregated system.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of us have been talking. We have some big issues with that.
I would encourage you then to formulate, a response that also takes into account the use cases that we've put out there, so we can come up, and we're very open to having ideas that would improve upon the recommendation we're giving. And I would highly encourage you to come up with a way to accomplish the goals we're trying to accomplish. And accomplish what you're
trying to do. I wasn't told. See, that's a little bit different. So I want to go back to my stakeholder group, because I wasn't told that the expert working group was leaning to that that conclusion. I was told that it was just there'd be a centralized source for, and what I read didn't seem to exclude that. So that kind of
doesn't exclude it. But that was the model that we put out.
I mean, this is something probably best. If you put it to us, if you can kind of put that to us, what your concerns are with it, we can address it. I mean, one of the things about any form of centralization in this is, in some respects, quite key if we want to be able to maintain the gated access concept. But, obviously there are concerns, and if we can address those, that'll be fantastic. Joy and then Yoav. It's Joy, isn't it? No. Oh, sorry. Holly, sorry. Sorry, sorry. You can slap me later.
No comment. First of all, I'd like to support the use of a phone booth to describe the system. But that said, it's Doctor Who. Come on.
TARDIS.
Gone. Very slow. just a couple of things. In reading the report, the centralized body will have a role in respect to verification. So I'm wondering if you've thought through the relationship between, say, ACAN's compliance department and the possibility of another body having some responsibility for verification. I didn't understand the tension between that. And the other is, I like the concept of gated access, but I'm just wondering, have you thought through, or will it be thought through, the relationship between the centralized body, and then how verification will work in that, and then how that will work with the privacy proxy issue and verification of what is, I suppose, my next question. I'm not sure there are answers. Maybe they're just questions that need to be asked.
I mean, they're all questions that we have been looking at. I mean, and again, these, any input anybody can give us on some of these things. I mean, I'll put you this way. If you think that the concept that we might put forward in some areas has validity, but you might have queries about it, great. Please put them to us. If you think the concept we've put forward is fundamentally flawed, please let us know, one, on one hand, why you think it's fundamentally flawed, and two, what your alternative is to that, if you have one. I'm getting control. God almighty, they're all excited about this. Yoav, this gentleman here, then Volker, then the other gentleman over there.
Okay. If maybe it's possible for you to explain in a few sentences, why didn't you go the way that Jeff just talked about, on having a body that kind of validates or authorizes who can have the access, but not controls the entire data? I think there are other aspects in addition to what Jeff raised, not only the fact that you're gonna have one provider holding the entire data. There's a lot of issues about around one provider having so much data, for different reasons. And I think that the cost issue is not only it's just adding another party to this whole chain. I suppose it will have a cost issue at the end on registrants. So I'm just, there's other people.
It actually could reduce your cost, Joav.
Why?
Because otherwise you're going to have to do the validation.
No, but registrars, yes. But I'm just talking about the entire chain. So maybe at the end registrants will need to pay more. I don't know. I'm just my question is, if you can explain why is that needed to create another body with the database, but not only an authoritative body that just tells the which each registry who's allowed to access.
So, this would probably encompass several days of our discussions that we've had, because this obviously this came up, right? This is not something that we didn't anticipate. So there are many reasons why we this was our preferred model that we came out with. It ranged from technical reasons around efficiency of storage and things like that, to the ability to standardize, to the ability to do cross-validation across a set. Compliance was mentioned a little while ago. This actually allows compliance to do a better job, potentially, at what they do. So there's a series of reasons. I think some of them may be apparent in the report. Maybe some of them aren't. But, Jeff, you're up and down. Okay. but there's a series of reasons why this was our recommendation. Now, other models are obviously were discussed as well. So this is why we want to get feedback here, and this is one of the questions that we were asking too. And also the cost issues were brought up. That's actually one of our questions as well. We think there is a great opportunity to reduce a lot of the costs and inefficiencies that there are currently in the model because of the distribution across registrars and registries of various types of systems, right, for both collecting and providing answers to these questions that people have about who's responsible for domain names. So we need a bit of a cost-benefit analysis around this, too. That's one of the areas we want to go into. So there is certainly a interesting opportunity here to potentially reduce costs in some areas, but obviously there will be a cost of operating whatever a central system is, right, whether it's access or it's full data or what have you. So those all have to be weighed out. But these are, again, things we need input from the community on.
In addition, rather than increasing costs to the registrars, I think it's going to bring down the costs to registrars because some of the responsibilities are taken over by the ARDS operator. So the cost to registrars is going to be lowered in this model.
No, that may be. That's registrars. But the question is, will it add cost to the registries, add cost to the channel? And at the end, look, if there's going to be another provider here in this whole chain, this probably is going to be a company that is full profit. So I'm just, intuitively, it seems like adding another cost. Maybe I'm wrong. That's my basic intuition.
I would posit that if a for-profit or not-for-profit would be a policy decision that GNSO might have some influence over.
gentleman here.
Heather Rainford. Just a quick, simple question that you probably can give me easily a reply on. When will this system be out there, workable and searchable?
Sorry?
When will it be available out there?
Where or when?
Okay.
When? We have no idea.
Okay, I think that depends on the GNSO Council, because this input is coming to the GNSO.
I think it's an implementation thing.
So it's a long process. After our work, we submit to the board probably submits to the GNSO, GNSO submit back to the board.
The short answer is not in the next 6 to 12 months. The long answer is it'll depend on a lot of different factors, but it's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Okay, Leo, do you think we've covered it? Are we at a position where we can? We've got Jeff. Have we got lots more in your queue?
I had Volker. I had at least one other person over there. I mean, you know, that
the charming
gentleman from Pakistan had a question.
Can I just ask, to clarify right. when he asked a question?
And don't jump the queue, Jeff, please.
But Michele, you've been admirably managing the queue, but I do want to remind you that we've got to bring it to a close relatively.
All right, I'll hold my.
Go on.
I'll let Jeff speak in my place.
Two questions.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when you said how it's a long time. I mean, all this stuff ultimately is going to go to the GNSO. The reason why we're hearing it now is because this is all going to feed into the policy development process. That was it.
Okay, my question would be, you're speaking of one provider that provides the central database. Have you also considered having multiple providers in multiple jurisdictions? Because having one provider in one jurisdiction might also carry with it the risk that the government of that country where that provider is situated will have special access to the data that other governments will not have. Certain data protection requirements are different in one country than from another, so would it be a consideration to have the registrant's location determine which database he is entered into, and that provider be another level for a certain mechanized ICANN output system that the requesters then could use, where the provider would, within its jurisdiction, determine what kind of information each requester can actually request and which data elements cannot be provided to anybody else in law enforcement or certain governments. Hmm?
The second part was... So the second half of your question is one of the reasons we proposed some of the things we did is that you could actually take into account privacy laws of various jurisdictions. I don't know that we really considered multiple providers in multiple jurisdictions because of that issue. That's an excellent point. So
I think it's Volker, that's a very good question. It's one I think we'll have to discuss.
Yep.
Saeed, you were next.
Thank you. I had two questions, but even if you did have multiple providers in multiple jurisdictions, they would all have the same data, and the risk would exactly be the same if...
Not under Volker's concept. I mean, Volker's talking about the data going to a different database dependent on the rules?
Okay.
Dependent on where the registrant is based.
Right.
Of course, that adds an extra complexity.
Okay, that would help. So my two questions are, one, and you've got it number two up on the list here, the accreditation of law enforcement agencies. I'd love to hear what you thought about those enforcement agencies that, say, abused the right, and then, you know, what would be the recourse? Any thoughts on that, number one? I can think of a few. And the second question is... on data protection, did you consider the cross-border flow of personal data as an issue? Because, say, the providers in the U.S., European who is data would not be able to flow to the U.S. as a result. So what was the thinking behind that? Thanks.
I'd point out, just on your last point, it does today. But,
but the EU has issues about it.
Exactly. And that last point, that was a discussion point we had, is that exact issue, and that's one of the things we emphasized, is that this provider would not necessarily be U.S.-centric. And that was a point we wanted to emphasize. On the law enforcement accreditation, that is a tricky area. We have... there are a couple of law enforcement agent or pan global law enforcement agencies that deal with this today. Interpol being probably the primary example there, where they actually do take into account exactly some of these issues that are of grave concern to many. And you know, what is the legitimate police force in a particular country at a particular time? That's not always an easy question to answer. So they actually have a deconfliction policy within Interpol to do that. That's one of the areas we thought would be a potential solution to the accreditation issue.
Okay, so Michele and colleagues, I'm conscious that there are some questions in this part of the room that have been waiting for some time. I'm not sure if you've got them on your list, and I'm also conscious of the overall
time. Jonathan, I mean, how much time do you have left? Can you give us?
I mean, realistically, we're 15 minutes over schedule, so I think we want two or three more minutes. I think we want two or three more questions, those that are outstanding, and close it off.
The lady and then Wolfgang, I suppose, and I'll have to close it out.
Thank you. Marie-Laure Leminard speaking for the record. To echo what Volker said, when I read in the report that it said international provider, I had this image coming to my mind of a provider based in Germany, for example, and suddenly thought, what would be the legal implications of having such a scenario? And second, could you tell us why is the issue of the consent of the registrant missing in the report, and if there is a possibility that it's included in the list of pending issues that have to be dealt with?
Consent?
Of the registrant. Because
with respect to what exactly?
To the whole model. I mean, at some point, the consent of the registrant is important in data protection. So I don't know whether you have considered touching upon this issue or not.
Stephanie might be able to speak to that.
Okay, yes. I want to say that just wanted to point out that we consider privacy to a large extent, if that is what the consent of registrant means. We had extensive discussion on the privacy issue. If Stephanie is in the house, she'll be able to speak more on that.
I defer to Stephanie.
Oh, okay, she's there.
Just let me make one basic point that I wanted to make earlier in the discussion of the costs. Understanding that the system is broken, you don't fix a broken system without new costs. So there will be costs. And the question is, who's going to bear them, it seems to me. One of the issues that requires a little bit more work, I would suggest, is privacy. With respect to the question regarding consent, it's taken as a sort of bottom line that data protection law applies, and that one of the reasons why a central registry is attractive is that it makes it easier to administer and actually enforce it. In terms of consent, it's the fundamental for many of the data protection laws. The question is, what kind of rights will others have? And obviously, if the central registry is held in a jurisdiction where data protection law applies, it will apply, depending on which jurisdiction it is, and I'm sorry to get arcane here, but it'll apply to everybody, whether they're, for instance, EU citizens or not. So your question about consent is very relevant.
And last question is Wolfgang.
Yeah, it was already answered. You know, I wanted to ask the same question on the role of the registrant, because we are talking here only from the perspective of the registry and the registrar, but the registrant is an important player in it, and my question was, you know, how you discuss it in the group and how you would, you know, figure it out, you know, what the role of the registrant in the whole new system is.
Yeah, I think our discussion here has been focused on registry and registrar, but because that's who's in the room. At least who's asking questions. But there are in our discussions, we started with the registrant. That was our number one use case, right, is the person who has control of the domain name and how they want to work with it, and everything built from that we put out here. So registrant was the very center of our entire discussion base. So every recommendation we have reflects that, I think. I hope.
As a matter of fact, the introduction of gated access is meant to protect the data of the registrant.
Right.
So that's core to it. So the registrant is top on consideration.
Jeff, you were last on the list, and then we're done.
So I agree with the notion that if something's broken, you need to spend money to fix it. I think that's right. But you don't fix the non-broken parts, which a lot of this tries to do. The parts that aren't broken right now, at least for, I'll speak on behalf of thick registries, when anyone comes to my site and tries to get the data, they can get it. It's easily accessible. It's not something that has ever been reported as being ever broken. So I really seriously, this whole discussion of where you put this now centralized provider, because now it's going to actually have the data, and now you're talking about potentially multiple centralized providers, it's a nightmare. You really should reconsider that and go with the notion of the whole, you know, if you want to centralize the access point at which someone needs to get that information or get accredited to get that information, that's fine. But keep the data with the registries. They're going to enforce their own policies that are compliant with their own laws. And there was a discussion, of sending different data depending on where the registrant is to different providers. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to go through, you know, X million number of names in .biz and have to say, well, this registrant says they're in Pakistan, so I got to send it to this provider, and this registrant says they're in Germany, so I got to send it to this provider. Guys, that becomes even much more broken, and it's easily solved by having the one access point in there, which solves the other problems that were broken in the paper of not knowing where to go and how to get the information. I think you could separate that out as to where the data is actually stored and pulled from. You don't need to create this behemoth new entity that's going to store every single WHOIS record from every single TLD out there.
Thanks, Jeff. So thank you to the members of the expert working group. This is an unusual, if I may be incorrect in saying unprecedented, mechanism of working. We've had, as you know, as a council, direct correspondence with the working group, and also in their general public communications, a recognition that any policy-related work is likely to come back through the established policy processes. So thank you for your work in trying to better build the background and picture to all of this that might precede that work, and thank you to the councillors for engaging with the group and providing constructive and thought-out feedback. Thanks. So we'll close that session. We can stop the recording in case that wasn't clear.